I can still remember my first day in Kilgamean Junior High School. Please never ask me how long ago that was. It's a long time. And I was just 11, and I had been my birthday in June and started in September, so I was very young to be at high school. And I really didn't want to be there at all. Going into the town situation was completely alien to me. I had, in my own way, at home, with just around the fields and the orchard with the dog, with the rabbits and the chickens, and down the back fishing. I lived my own Huckleberry Finn style life when I was wee, and I loved it that way. And I hated high school from the day I went through the door until I left. But on that first day that we were there in the assembly, I can remember two distinct thumps, and that was two young people that just got too much for them, and they conked out. And they were all right, thankfully, but they just fainted because of the whole pressure of the day and the heat that there was. But I remember that Mr. Riley doing a really strange thing. And he said, we're always looking for talent among the students. And are there any ones in the first years and you can sing? And a fella that ended up in my class, he right away put his hand up. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't sing an hour, but even if I could, I wouldn't have been doing it. But he put his hand up and he asked him to come up to the front, and he got up onto the stage, and as loud as he could, he sang a song. I think it was the Osmonds that sang it, and if you're of a certain age, you can remember them. It was called Paper Roses. And he got up and he sang it at the top of his voice, all of it. And he sat down again without an air. I thought, later on in that week, in room 26, which was Mrs. Montgomery's room where she taught us music, she decided that we would all sing individually, and it was never going to happen. I wasn't trying to be rude or disrespectful or anything, but I would not have been singing full stop, and that was it. It came to my turn, and I just said about six or seven words just the way I'm saying them to you now. And I refused to sing. I didn't have a song. And I was so full of apprehension and nervousness and feeling lost and fretting and wishing I was back down the fields at home. And all of those thoughts were in my mind. I simply would not have been singing. I didn't have a song. And folks, we have read in Psalm 137... about the Israelites when they didn't have a song. Now the Lord gives his people a song. Over in the Psalms it says that he hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. And we have in this Psalm 137 some of the details of their captivity in Babylon. If you read in Obadiah, the verses there, you will see that a very well disciplined and a very well armed Babylonian war machine marched into Jerusalem, took the people and destroyed the place of worship and many other things as well. And Edom were up in the mountains, they were watching, and those who tried to hide somewhere, they took them and they handed them over. And hence you have these people now in captivity. In some ways, this is a very sad psalm. Some people believe that it was written by Jeremiah, of course, you know that all the psalms weren't written by David. Different people wrote them. He wrote more than anyone, but I believe that Jeremiah perhaps wrote this one. He was the prophet of tears, and he might well have done that as he thought of his countrymen. But when I think of Babylon, Babylon was so different from Jerusalem. Zion or Jerusalem, the thought there is of the city of peace and how peaceful it was until Babylon came in and took the people away. But Babylon, the name means confusion, and there's never going to be anything good there for those who came from Jerusalem. And as they sat there, completely away from all that was familiar to them, it says in verse 1, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. I have to say that, and maybe it's just me taking after my mother, but I love the noise of a child crying. I'm serious, there's something about it. It makes you feel young. And so don't be worrying about the baby, because I'm not worrying about it one bit at all. It says here that they sat down and they wept. And the thought behind the word sitting down there is that not only that they were exhausted, but the thought was of permanency. Permanency. So here we have them. Those who were noted for their singing. In Ezra chapter 2, there were at least 128 musicians. Singing was a big part of their life. You know about Israel, how they loved to sing the song of Moses and the Lamb. And how playing the harp and being joyful was such a big part of their life. Well, it says in verse 2 that they hang their harps upon the willows. The indication here being given to us that they didn't have a song anymore. They didn't have a song anymore. And brethren and sisters, what a picture there is. Also says, I should say in verse 4, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? Well, that's how I felt in room 26 sitting there. Felt completely out, away from everything was familiar to me, and there's no one on this earth would have got me to sing. And it seems that that was the case with these individuals at this time. Again, read Obadiah. We've read a little bit in Jeremiah 49 where the Lord is indicating that Edom will pay for what they did. We'll mention that later on during the message. But what a picture we have here of a Christian today. The Lord has given to us a new song. If you were here last Sunday night, you're probably singing it in your heart. Or here on Tuesday night, or here on Wednesday night, you would have been hopefully singing it in your heart. You know what I'm talking about here. Not necessarily that you sing audibly, but you've got a song, because the Lord has given to you a new song. And my title this morning is, as I look at this and apply it to us today, the title is Reflection When We Can't Sing. Reflection When We Can't Sing. And as I seek to draw your attention to that message, that title, I want you to notice some things briefly concerning these people. I want you to notice, first of all, their state. I've already read again verse 1 where it says, down at the rivers in Babylon, they sat down there and they wept. Been quite a journey for them. No doubt it was taking its toll on some of them coming from Jerusalem to here. Probably they were not treated with any great care by those who had taken them captive. And all in all, it was a long and an arduous and a hateful journey for those who were now in Babylon. Once joy had brightened their lives. And brethren and sisters, when the joy of the Lord brightens our lives, keep, as I mentioned earlier, please keep praying. Let's not get complacent. Let's not think, well, it may just stay like this. If he's brightening your life, keep on praying. Lay hold on to him. Because joy once brightened their lives. And in this Psalm 137, that joy is totally eclipsed by a great depression of spirit that is hanging over their heads. They're brokenhearted. They're brokenhearted and far away from where they belonged and where they longed to be. But I want to say this. We're looking here at their state. They're sat down now in Babylon by the Euphrates, the Tigris, wherever it is. And they are people with heavy hearts. And no doubt in Psalm 137, they are reflecting. And they're reflecting on their state. I've already said there that they weren't being well treated. It says in verse 3 that they wasted them. And they required mirth of them. They made fun of them. They mocked them. They were laughing them to scorn. The harps are hanging on the willows. They're not being used. Very sad episode in their history. But this is what I want to say about their state. While the journey from Jerusalem to where they now are in Babylon was an arduous and a hateful and a very reluctant journey for them, their journey to this place did not start in Jerusalem. Their journey to here began in their heart. It began in their heart. And that's why they're in this state. Over in Jeremiah chapter 25, I can't take time today to read all of the words that I'd like to draw your attention to, but I'll read verse 3. It says, "From the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, even unto this day, that is the 23rd year, the word of the Lord hath come unto me, and I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but ye have not hearkened." Folks, whoever comes to preach, whether it's me on the regular Sunday or somebody else, always ask the Lord, "Lord, give me an ear, a hearing ear. Help me to listen with a heart ready for a word. Maybe a sentence or less than that, but something that I can leave and say, 'Lord, that was for me.'" These people weren't interested in that. And again, that's the importance of being in God's house when we can, to hear the word. "I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but ye have not hearkened." There's no hearkening, but if you look in verse 4, it says, or no hearing, it says in verse 4, "And the Lord has sent unto you all the servants of prophets, rising early and sending them, but ye have not hearkened, nor inclined your ear to hear." The words are meaning to bend your ear to hear. You haven't had any heart for what you're listening to. Just come over your head or in one ear and out the other. Verse 6, it says, "And go not after other gods to serve them, to worship them, to provoke me to anger with the works of your hands, and I will do you no hurt." You see, this is speaking of not going after other gods to serve them and worship them in verse 6, but that's the kind of thing that they were involved in. Verse 6, the Lord's going to, 9, sorry, the Lord's going to use Nebuchadnezzar here. And verse 9 as well, God is grieved. God is grieved. If I can summarize how it was with them and how this journey from Babylon to Jerusalem didn't begin when Babylon's might came into the city, but it began in their heart long before that, because the Lord gave them the land, and they defiled it. They defiled it. They ran after the imagination of their own hearts. They were given, you and I would call it today perhaps, an addiction to other things, worshipping other gods. This does not necessarily mean little totem poles or statues, anything. Anything that you and I can worship in the place of the Lord is a problem. And they had plenty of these problems. The Lord gave them the land and they defiled it. And if I can fast forward to now, the Lord has been so good. And I've been thinking about that a lot. I'm sure you have. with all of the Brexit chaos that there is, and I don't know or care what way you're voting, that's your business, or what way you hope it goes, but I'll just say this. Everybody knows that the whole thing's a complete shambles at the moment. Everything's a shambles. And the Lord has given so much to the land, but men have defiled it. And they've shook their fist in the face of God time and time and time again. And they've rubbished his word. And they're seeking to silence his street preachers in various parts of the mainland. You know that. And someone said, even recently, and drawn attention to it in these past days, I'm not in any way saying that it was right, the murdering, because it was wrong, the murdering of those people in New Zealand. And there's some 50 of them died, and it was a terrible tragedy. But how much have you seen in our local news about the 200? Now, I don't know if they're all genuinely saved or not, but they're certainly called Christians out in Nigeria who've been slaughtered in this past couple of weeks. Not a word. Not a word about it. And because men love darkness rather than light, and men are more given to almost anything that is anti-God. Defiled the land. Pray much for our boys and girls. They need your prayers and mine as well. That the Lord will preserve them. That he will give them good days in Northern Ireland. And good days of his right hand. Days of blessing and days when they'll be edified. And days when there'll be many people being converted. And when they have families of their own. That they'll know the blessing of the Lord. And pray for all of those things. Because the land's defiled. He gave them the land and they defiled it. He gave them the law and they defied it. They didn't want to know. It says there, the weeping prophet is saying in chapter 25 and verse 3 here, that they had spoken unto them, but they wouldn't hearken. In verse 4, as we mentioned, they didn't incline their ear. They just did not want, it was too narrow. That was it. It's too narrow. You know, the Bible's too narrow for a lot of people now. And you and I, folks, need to pray as never before that that will change. Because the Lord has given to this land his word. And men are defying it on every hand. He gave them the land and they defiled it. He gave them the law and they defied it. But they had the Lord and they denied him. They had his presence. They knew his blessing. They had his promises. If they would obey him. But they lived in a way, and this ties in with what one of the brethren said this morning in the prayer meeting. If we say that we love the Lord and his word, how can we live in a way that is anti his word? Well, these people did. And there was no joy. And you see, when they got to Babylon, there was no way in this world that the Lord was ever going to allow them to be happy there, because it was not where they should have been. Over in the book of Proverbs, chapter 14, this is what it says in verse 14. It says, the backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways. It says there, the backslider in heart. The thought behind these words is taking a willful step. I don't know if you've experienced that or not, but sometimes if you're walking on with the Lord and you've been doing that for quite a while and you know there's another way to go and there's an opportunity there to get out of step, it's been quite difficult to take. Now, whether that is for a younger or an older person, for anyone, taking that first step has to be a willful step. But once you've taken it, the next one's easier. And the next one after that is easier still. And it says, see, the backslider, those who take that willful step shall be, in heart, shall be filled with his own ways. One step leads to another. And isn't it true? And well, I'm not pointing at anyone, of course, but when a person gets away, that the resistance to that which they used to resist, the resistance, it wanes. And the resistance goes. But you know something? It also says there concerning them, in verse 1 of Psalm 137, it says that they remembered. They remembered. They remembered the place where they did have joy and the song. They remembered the place of God's presence. But now they're just completely shackled by fears and uncertainty. Over there in Proverbs again, I'll just read for you folks what it says. It's Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs 1, verse 23. Proverbs 1, verse 23 says, "Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you, and I will make known my words unto you." In other words, when I reprove you, listen, and there's blessing for you. Listen, and there's blessing for you. And here we have these people who had been greatly blessed of the Lord. They've come on this journey which has begun not at Jerusalem, but in their hearts. But now it has culminated in their captivity and sitting there, the thought of permanency being in their mind. Their harps are hung up. All those who are looking after them or have them, their captors are mocking them and making fun of them. But you know, it's important to remember the Lord hadn't totally given them up. He hadn't totally given them up. And it's very, very possible for people like you and I to get to Babylon, so to speak. And the journey doesn't start in Agalee Free Presbyterian Church or any other one either. But the journey to captivity and to defeat, and the journey to the place where you can't sing. Remember the title, Reflection When You Can't Sing. The journey to the place where you can't sing always begins in our heart, even with something perhaps relatively trivial or small. But nonetheless, we take that first step and then another one. I wonder, did the hymn writer do that? I think they did. When they later penned the words, "Where is the blessedness I knew when first I saw the Lord? Where is the soul refreshing view of Jesus and his word?" And we all have to ask ourselves, do we still have the blessedness that we first knew when we come to the Lord? Is there still a song there? Is there still joy in our heart, genuinely? Or are you just like me when I was sitting in room 26, no song? There was never going to be a song there, no singing. Or like the people here in the Psalm 137, they've made it clear that there's no song because they actually hanged up their harps. There's going to be no singing. Perhaps it was for that reason that their captors have mocked them and said, "Sing us one of the songs of Zion." They saw the harps hung up and they think these people are not singing anymore. It all was because of what happened in their heart. And now they end up in the place called Babylon, the place of confusion. That's what always happens when we get out of tune with the Lord. We don't know how to weigh things up correctly anymore. We used to weigh them up and think of what the Bible would tell us and what the Lord would have us to do, but whenever our heart goes on that journey away from the ways that God would have us to go, we begin to weigh things up in a different way. And along with that, there comes misery. and apprehension and fears. And we can get to that stage, and this is maybe sounds extreme, but it can get to the stage where nothing and nobody, nothing is right. You can blame it on whatever we want. And maybe there's a lot of people not right. But we can say that everything, or nothing is right and nobody is right. And I remember one day, I can't remember what it was that the Reverend Ron Johnson was talking about to us in the college. He was talking to us, missionary principals, and he was trying to encourage the students, for any who went out to the mission field, that when you go onto the field, you're going to meet a whole lot of different personalities and people from different cultures, and it's going to be hard work. But I can't remember exactly what he said, but he was speaking of keeping your heart in tune, because this is what he said. He said, someone put it this way, when your stomach is off, nothing on the table looks good. And so it is spiritually for us. When we get to that point where the harps are hanged and there's no song, nothing's right and neither's anyone. The state was one of misery. So reflecting here when you can't sing, it's a state of misery. And brethren and sisters, it does no harm to remind ourselves every single day to look after our heart. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. This journey started in their heart. But I want to notice, and it will be very brief here, I just want to look at their silence. You will see here, they say in verse 4, how can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? The thought there behind the verse again is of impossibility. See, wandering from God never keeps its promises, ever. Getting away from the Lord and going your own way never delivers. Oh, the cry today is for less restriction. And I'm not just talking here about boys and young people who want to do something or go and do something by themselves, for everyone. We can't say that, in fact, about the young people, because the legislators want less restriction. Less restriction. More time to do exactly what you want. But there was with these people now silence where there had been singing. And folks, how many times people who've been very bright for the Lord and even a channel for the Lord, and maybe very winsome in their ways, how often they've become silent. And I don't mean that you have to sing, of course, to be bright for the Lord. But the light that burned very brightly maybe seems to be burning very dim. Samson in the Bible was a prime example of this. He was a man who he knew that if he lost out in his consecration to the Lord, and if he told the secret of his strength, that his strength would go. It couldn't have been much plainer for Samson. For it actually says there that he said to Delilah, if I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. What did he tell her that for? You and I might think, how stupid can you get? You know, you might think, he told her. But sin has a strange attraction. And sometimes it makes us behave in a way that we wouldn't normally behave. And so it was with this Samson man here. And it says in verse 20, in Judges chapter 16, where I've been reading from, that she, that is Delilah, said, the Philistines be upon you, Samson. And he awoke out of his sleep and said, I will go out at other times as at other times before and shake myself. Do you remember he took the door posts away with him, and he broke the cords and no one could hold him because he hadn't told her. But now he told her and she shaved his hair off. And he went away out, and he's full of self-confidence here. He says, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. In other words, things are just as they are. Well, it says here, and he wist not, or the word means he knew not, that the Lord was departed from him. When he went out, he felt that everything was just as it was before, and he would handle the Philistines, which he was well able to do. He didn't know that the Lord was departed from him, but brethren and sisters, he was always going to find out. He was always going to find out. He tripped over himself. And so will I, if I trifle consciously with sin. And I could do it, and there could be inward shame and guilt and regret could all be present. And yet we think we can just go on and know the blessing of the Lord as at other times. What an awful thing one day to find out that the Lord's favor has departed from us. He still loves us, but the blessing's gone because we have been trifling with sin. And I don't know what kind of sin can trouble people today, all kinds of sins. I mentioned some regarding these people who were now in Babylon. They had the word, but they wouldn't listen. And they had the land, but they defiled it. They wanted their sin in the word. There was that constant draw towards the way of others. That's still the same today. Constant draw towards the way of the world. But the world mocks just like they mock. The world mocks us still if we try to be like them. There was their silence, just like Samson. Samson was finished. Now, we know the Lord used him on one final occasion. But this girl, Delilah, she got this great man to tell the secret of his strength. Please don't underestimate sin. As someone said in a song, it'll take you further than you want to go. And so it will. Destroyed Samson. The Lord used him one last time, not because he deserved it, but because ultimately it brought glory to the Lord. So there was the people here who had lost their song. There was their state. They were sitting down. They felt they were never going to sing again. They were being mocked. The journey started in their heart, and that's what happens. But then there was their silence. And let's not kid ourselves. If we lose out with the Lord and chase after other things, and other things come into our lives and we worship them, and we're losing out with the Lord, silence will be there. The brightness will have gone. The brightness will have gone. Remember, we are, as Paul taught the church at Philippi, to be luminaries. The moon is a luminary that reflects the light of the sun. And you and I are luminaries that reflect the light of Christ in a fallen world. How important it is. What a privilege it is just to be able to do that. So there was their state and then their silence, but there was their supplication. If you go on down through the Psalm 137, it says, "Now if I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning." These are fond thoughts I have. "If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy." It's good, folks, when you miss a close walk with God. It's good when you miss that close fellowship with the Lord, and you miss loving coming along to meetings and fellowshipping with God's people. When you miss that, that's good. If you don't miss it, start praying. But they said here, "Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof." And you know, I mentioned earlier the book Obadiah, and you have Edom hiding up in the little mountains, or in the mountains and the rocks, and they think they're untouchable. And if you read Obadiah at home, we've referred to, preached from it before, I think it was verse 11, and how they were involved in the day when Jerusalem fell. They took the side of the Babylonians. But these ones are praying, "Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, raise it, or make it bare or desolate. They're praying now. And that was way back. We read over in Jeremiah there, in chapter 49, about how the Lord would deal with Edom. Now they're remembering the importance of what the Lord says and remembering the importance of seeking his face. When they start praying, they stop losing out. And God intervened. And our time is gone. God intervened on their part. And he dealt very severely with Edom, read Obadiah. And he delivered them from the captivity. And folks, how much better it would be that whenever we see temptation or worldly opportunity that would go against God's word, as someone prayed in the Bible this morning, or in the prayer meeting this morning, when we see that coming and it's knocking at the door, how much better to pray then than to wait till the song is gone? You've lost out. The hymn writer said in another place, tune my heart to sing thy praise. And may the Lord tune all of our hearts and help us to stay close to him. And if we have lost out today, here's reflection when there's no singing. Trust you'll get the song back again, and the joy of the Lord will fill your heart.